online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Sundog, the podcast. You're listening to episode number 9, Technology to Go. We're looking today at smartphones. My name is Lon Keller. I'm the senior editor here at Sundog Studios, and we're going to let the panel introduce themselves today. We'll start with Mr. Eric Utz.
Hi, I'm Eric. I work in the engineering department, information architecture, web development, design, all kinds of stuff.
Jonathan Rademacher, I head up the delivery team.
Yeah, Mark Sherseth, I head up our application development team.
And Chuck Tomonic, I'm a systems analyst.
Okay, gents, thanks very much for joining us today. The whole smartphone technology, that kind of began back when? Late 90s, early 2000, Palm introduced something. Was it their 7, Palm 7?
Yeah, it was somewhere around there. It was pretty ugly, and it hasn't gotten much better.
Yeah, and that was barely a phone. I think it had a ubiquitous wireless connection to some special server that Palm set up, and then
I think that's a BlackBerry model.
Yeah,
I think their first significant one was the early Trio models.
Yeah, or that phone that you could stick into the end of the visor that turned the big, bulky Palm or handspring visor into a phone.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were thinking that, you know, this thing was going to get millions and millions of subscribers. It was supposed to be the catalyst that launched, you know, everyone walking around with one of these smartphones. They topped out at under 200,000. Why? What really failed for them?
I think the big thing that failed that we found over time is the interface. I mean, it's your point of exposure to the product, and the iPhone has gone leaps and bounds beyond where all the other folks are at in those first iterations of the Palm models. They just failed miserably on all fronts. They try to do handwriting recognition. They try to do a lot of things that we found are not that terribly necessary, or it was so difficult to use, it wasn't worth using.
Yeah, and the evolution of most smartphone interfaces up until the iPhone had been stagnant for years. 10 years ago, the Palm interface really isn't any different as it was with the original Palm Pilot that came out 97.
And I think 96. we're slowly working towards a convergence where it doesn't matter what smartphone you have, you can come up with a similar user experience. If you look at the internet, we've got one internet. You know, you can be on a Mac, you can be on a Unix box, you can be on a Windows box. You go to the internet, you got the same interface and same interaction points. If you use a Palm device, or if you use a BlackBerry, or if you use an iPhone, you get a different experience in each one of those, and you get very hardware dependent, which is a bad thing, and it's not very evolved yet.
So it sounds like you're calling for sort of a universal platform, so that we can kind of sort of take the device out of the picture and have the same applications on any device.
Yeah, I think the device is just too much of a limiter, especially when you combine that with you've got a mobile carrier you have to deal with also.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool if someone came up with an open platform, huh?
Yeah, a big player?
Yeah.
Somebody big.
What makes a smartphone smart? What does it have to have? Or are all phones today smart?
No, I would say it has to have some key functions. It has to have access to internet via data packages, and it has to be able to, in my mind, in order to be an actual smartphone, it has to be able to do some sort of productivity software, you know, with email and then other documents and stuff like that, so you can actually accomplish something when you're on the road.
So my little what is this thing, a VX9800 LG? It'll do the web on a good day. Doesn't count.
Does it do email? Does it do calendaring?
It'll do, you know, I can do basic text, and that's about it.
I'd say the point where I realized that I was really using a smartphone is when I didn't have to re-enter anything into the phone. I could be at a web browser and interact with a web application. I could use my phone, and it's always the same session. It's always the same point of presence versus, oh, I got to enter in all my phone numbers into here. Or, oh, I got a contact on my computer but not on my phone, and I need to get a hold of them. What do I do? I think that's where a big step for me was.
Yeah, and a lot about with a smartphone, just like you're saying, taking everything with you and being able to get it out of that walled garden too. Most regular handsets you get, you put stuff into the phone and it's in the phone. It's not going anywhere else. You might be able to transfer it over to a new handset that you're getting, but a lot of times it doesn't matter. There's no other way to get to the information. But with smartphones, they usually run some kind of open API for calendaring and contacts and
but it's got to be more than just web. More than just a portal though, right? To be a smartphone, I mean, it has to be able to run actual applications, wouldn't you say?
So you're saying it has to be a computer? It has to be a little
somewhat
computer?
Well, when you say applications, do you mean native applications or web applications, or I mean, because you can
both
with the web now. I mean, web applications, you can do almost anything you can do natively.
And we found there's a lot of cost advantages and other things associated with using purely a web application. So why would I want to have something on my smartphone running?
Yeah, and with the proliferation of the software as a service model, you're going to have most of your applications out there in the cloud, right?
So yeah, you go to.
So it really is just a portal then at that point.
Mm-hmm. So the problem though that I've seen is when I have looked at these software as a service offerings is that on the website you can use them however you like if you have a web browser, but with the smartphones you have to have a specific install for each different one and gives you a different experience and goes back to that original point we were discussing where I have to download something. It has to be something that's native versus being ubiquitous web interface.
Okay. Folks, I'm in the room today with four what I consider to be smartphone power users within Sundog here. So let's just go around. What's everybody packing? What kind of phone do you have? What have you tried? What doesn't work? What works well for you?
I have 2-year-old 700P Palm or Trio and getting ready to change it. Wish it could be an iPhone, but they don't have those here in Fargo, so my next one will probably be a Centro. That's what I'm landing on now.
So I've got the 755P. It's another Palm device. I've used the Windows Mobile devices and haven't had great luck with them. I'm sort of lusting over the functionality I've seen on the iPod Touch and looking forward to the iPhone and also the competitors that are going to have to go after that same paradigm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just recently switched from the Palm 755P and went to the BlackBerry, I think it's the 8830, and we'll soon be switching back to the Trio 755P. And so also kind of looking forward to some sort of iPhone X. We just don't have access where we're at, so it's kind of slowing everything, and unless something happens with the carrier deals with Apple, I don't know that we'll have one anytime
soon.
Yeah,
it's kind of sad. I mean, they're introducing it in Australia now, and they're signing up multiple carriers for the iPhone. I just wish something like that could have happened here in the States to launch the thing.
What are you on, Chuck?
Oh, I don't even have a smartphone yet. I am on the old flip phone, but I do have the iPod Touch. I love the UI on it. If this iPhone ever does get to Fargo, I will definitely be in line for that. It would have to be V2, though. There's just too much functionality missing from the first one.
But I think, again, the competition breeds a better product. And you look at BlackBerry, they're coming up with a touch model. If you look at the HTC Verizon phone, that's pretty close to an iPod Touch or an iPhone. And I've heard a lot of complaints because they didn't quite get things right. But there's a new BlackBerry Touch that's coming.
Okay.
Right. I think Microsoft is also planning to launch their platform on a BlackBerry real soon, too. So
yeah, I think the pain point on the Microsoft phones is, again, that you're always tied to this platform and only certain applications work on certain phones, and it's very monopolistic approach to it, which gets very frustrating.
Yeah. And there was that platform that was alluded to earlier by some big player.
Yep. So we talked a little bit before, and don't know if we want to get to that just yet, but
go right ahead.
You know, Android has been a huge thing for us to investigate. That's an offering from Google. They've got some partners, and we've been watching this very closely, and they're doing some really cool stuff that we've never seen with smartphones that I think are really cool and really interesting, but it causes you to wonder about how much you actually want to expose to the web with some of these technologies we're seeing. I know with Android and some of the other ones, you can actually not only tell get updates from folks, but tell where they're at and possibly what they're doing. And a lot of folks that guard their privacy, you know, may have concerns about that.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily exactly, you know, why Android is
it's one application of Android.
I think the big thing behind Android and the Open Handset Alliance is that they're trying to sort of take the carrier and the, you know, the the hardware manufacturers out of the equation here. We can actually, as developers, build applications for one platform that is sort of universal for, you know, that'll work on any device.
Yeah, and I guess I wasn't pointing out Android. I was possibly jumping ahead to some of the applications folks are using for it and where things may be going with that. But I think Android is a really cool thing, and I think it's causing some people some concern in the established cell phone industry and software industry.
Well, I think that's a great thing. If we can, you know, right now we have the big network companies are basically controlling every type of phone and every product that comes onto these things. We've seen with the iPhone a move away from that, where the actual hardware manufacturer can determine what the phone's going to do. And I think with Android coming on, we'll even be able to move farther away and put some of that power into the hands of developers and give some people some choices.
And, you know, to be fair, Palm really has they have a pretty large developer network, and the networks don't have the same kind of control over the Trio and other devices like the BlackBerry as they do with their normal handsets, where you can only buy stuff that's on their specific network and install it on the phone. With a smartphone, you know, with the Trio, you know, I can find any Palm application and install it, and
yeah, but
never really had
a problem. Seriously, don't you feel like you're kind of driving a 57 Studebaker?
More like a 67 Pinto.
You know, even though we're looking forward to upgrading to a newer Palm model, you still get the same old 60s dashboard. And
I'm not defending that part of it. I'm just talking about being able to put applications on it and having the handset functionality be somewhat separated from the carrier.
Now Palm actually has plans for a complete sort of makeover here by, I think, late 2009.
I think it'd be too late.
But that's what everyone's kind of saying, is that that's, you know.
Yeah, if it's released next year, it'll be 3 years obsolete. I have no doubt, because I don't know. It seems like they'll probably just tack on the interface that they have now onto the Linux backend that they're developing. And
well, in here we have just a report today here that Microsoft is talking about having 40% market share in the smartphone market by, I think, 2010 or 2012. So how do you guys feel about that? What's the likelihood of that?
I think
Microsoft dominance doesn't even have anywhere near 40% today. And then
I think possibly Joe Consumer buys a phone. They don't know what's running on it until they get it, and then they're upset. So yeah, I can see that definitely happening with how phones are sold. They're not sold for the UI typically. They're sold typically for the structure and the plan you're gonna sign up with it.
How much difference does the UI make compared to the service, the speed that you get? 3G phones, for example, is that more of a factor as to how functional a phone can be? Is its connectivity speed?
Somewhat. I've seen videos. I've never been able to test it because I don't have an iPhone and nobody I know has one. But iPhones are on what's considered the standard data connection. They call it AT&T's Edge, and it's kind of, I don't know, probably as fast as a really fast dial-up connection. I guess. I'm not even sure.
I think the 3G is an enabler. It helps, you know, do some of the things that a cell phone supposed to, or a smartphone supposed to do around delivering video, delivering streaming audio. That's more of an enabler. I think the UI, again, as you were saying, it's the difference between a broadband and a high-speed line. And then once you get it into your house, right, mm-hmm. you still have to have a different interface that you're dealing with.
Yep. And one thing that I was going to tie onto that, you know, Trios are all on the really fast Sprint network, but rendering a page in Blazor, it's not just the data connection you have, it's how quick the browser is, how fast the operating system is, how fast the processor is, everything about it. And, you know, loading a website on a really fast connection through mobile Safari on an iPhone, mm-hmm. you know, that would kill what comes up with the Blazor, which is the Palm web browser. So with that, the normal speed Safari, I'm sure, still beats out high speed Blazor. So that part of the interface, where having a better interface will make you not think so much about the network connection speed. But
so there's a lot of room on all ends,
yeah.
to clean up and get going. The competition still isn't there.
What are some of the challenges out there for web developers now? I mean, the iPhone will render a page pretty much as you find on your computer, on your desk. And then there are smartphone specific sites that you can go to. I mean, they're built for those little screens. What do developers need to take into account when they're building a website for a customer? Do they automatically have to start thinking mobile?
As a web developer, I build websites with accessibility and mobility in mind. The HTML behind everything. In Blazor, you usually have to shut off any kind of style sheets or anything that makes a page look fancy, just so you can read it anyway. And as long as the HTML is written correctly, then it should already work just fine in your mobile browser.
But you don't specifically design for the mobile browser in every case, right?
The markup, it's basically built to run anywhere. The CSS is not mobile, no. That's desktop, or the style sheets for it. But the way to make the website look pretty is focused almost entirely on the desktop browser.
Do you think there's a difference, though, if you were to specifically design for mobile from the start? Do you think you'd...
I think there should be, yeah.
Yeah. Because I think I read something here about just recently there's a lot of traffic that's being ignored by not having specific mobile interfaces. There's a lot of people that will... some sort of Nielsen report I was just reading about that talks about 13% increase potential in your potential audience for creating a mobile-specific version of your website. Users that an audience that probably wouldn't be there otherwise. They won't use your regular site on their PCs.
Yeah, who does a good mobile website? What do you guys think?
Google does a really good job with all of their stuff.
Google does a good job. Some of the other ones I frequent, I've been frustrated with some, but some of them I frequent. Engadget's got a decent one. New York Times does a pretty good job with a mobile
specific
site.
Fair. Facebook's is really more geared towards the mobile flip phone. Extremely limited browser that's in that, but it works fine in the Trio too.
It's been a hunt and peck and really a frustrating undertaking to
And then there are some sites
anything.
That don't even allow you to get to the regular big site. If you browse to it with a mobile phone, like Palm's own site, you get a very limited portal that you can't even get out of if you wanted to, which is also frustrating.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, there's one other thing to note, and that is that, like, even on the iPhone's browser where you have a browser that can display a full web page, it doesn't mean that the experience isn't degraded, because it is still extremely compact. So when you get into, you know, very, very wordy, very media-rich sites, you know, it can't display Flash. It, doesn't do JavaScript, and so you still lose quite a bit even on a browser like that when you have a full-on web page that's not kind of, you know, geared towards mobile.
Just on a side note there, are they actually going to allow JavaScript in V2?
It does do JavaScript now.
Yeah.
The browser update did?
The mobile Safari always has, as far as I know.
No, it wasn't doing it on the iPhone and iPod Touches before.
I know there's a big statement about we're not going to have Flash on it, but that may have been retorted.
I don't know. I guess I'm not sure if they're going to.
I think it was more of a company war.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Flash thing is both a performance issue and a political issue. They don't want to, like right now, and Flash has pretty lousy performance for the most part on a full-sized Mac.
Yeah.
And optimizing their code for a tiny little Mac would be probably impossible.
So, Eric, when we typically do some sort of ad campaign and have, you know, like banner ads and whatnot, what is our alternative then in a sort of a touch platform or a iPhone platform? For websites specifically made for those platforms.
That really needs to. There are all kinds of ways to do it. They're not really doing anything like that now, other than maybe animated GIF files or just flat JPEGs or just images. But there are all kinds of, like, the Safari browser has a lot of things built into it that give it a lot of close to Flash functionality anyway.
I guess another piece is that it's been frustrating when we have worked with companies that want to enable their salespeople to have smartphones. We again have to have them standardize on one particular phone and specific model sometimes, and obviously the same operating system that's running to make sure that the application will even work. Otherwise, you end up saying, "Well, I'm going to optimize this for Blazor." Okay, well, then you've just optimized it for, you know, maybe 1% of your audience. You know, how much effort is it really worth to do that? So when you have a captured audience like your sales staff, and you make them standardize on one phone that doesn't do everything you like, again, you're locked in, and that's one thing we don't like to do.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you guys feel about location-based services in smartphones?
I think that's kind of the killer app, really, that's going to propel things like Android along. I think going forward, I don't know today if it's really playing as strong quite yet, but with specifically in some of the Android applications that are coming out, even though there isn't any hardware yet released for Android, I think we're seeing applications that are doing a lot of geotagging and telling you what, say, this building is when you look at it through your camera, or kind of give you directions like your GPS navigator will.
Mm-hmm. I think it opens a whole new area of advertising and marketing opportunities. You know, the geotagging, again, we talked about privacy a little bit, but there's no reason why they can't have privacy settings and still allow, you know, Google's already doing geotagging on some of their ads, but on a mobile device, you're walking down the street, you walk by a pizza shop, it's around noon, you know, hey, $15 off a, you know, family order if you come in right now.
And it certainly, in my opinion anyway, should be set up as an opt-in.
Yep.
And not an opt-out option, because all of a sudden, you know, if people just start getting hammered with, you know, coupons for a pizza shop that they just walked by, they're going to probably trade the smartphone in and go back to just a standard one and life in peace.
Yeah, not to get into too much of an age discussion, but I'd say that, you know, I take my privacy pretty seriously, but I've noticed that when we get out in the webosphere, you know, some folks want to be extremely public, and we've seen that with a lot of the applications that we use very close, right? It's Facebook, Twitter, you know what people are doing, where they're doing it, you know, everything about them. And, you know, maybe it's a generational gap where the next generation won't care that people know where they're at. They'll think that they're just one of a 100 million, so how's anybody going to find you anyway?
But I think what he's saying is very important, though, that we build in some of that security so that we, you know, so that we're playing to all ages here. And
I definitely think,
especially the younger ages, that will not realize how vulnerable they might be.
And I guess the reason I bring up the topic is it makes me question my assumptions when I go in there. I would assume that no one would want to know when I see the, I forget what commercial it was, maybe it was a T-Mobile commercial, but they show everybody's friends as dots moving around this map, and I know where Tim is, I know where Sally is. Oh, Sally's with Tim. And the first thing I go is, whoa, you know, God, I don't want that to happen. But as a marketer, et cetera, you really have to evaluate your customer base and what they really want, and if that's the type of application they're looking for, produce it and make the best one you can, and allow them the privacy if they need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, they could turn it into a Facebook type of thing where you really do have privacy unless you let people into your group of friends. Mm-hmm. You see the little dots on the screen, and those are just people that you have made friends and allow to follow you. And
hey, guess what? They're building walls next door.
Well, you know, to that end, in a lot of these applications out there where you're being solicited, you're providing some demographic information anyway as to what you want to know about, what you want, you know, others to contact you for. So if you're walking by a pizza shop, if you're interested in pizza, wouldn't you want a pizza?
Well, there's
a pizza coupon or something. You know, but I don't if I'm walking by a bridal shop. Right? I don't want to know about that.
Yeah, but we maybe get a bit off topic, but still Facebook, you know, them adding ads to your Facebook page was a big area of controversy. You know, I was in there the other day and there's a Verizon ad, and you know, why do I want to get Verizon ads? You know, it the trust around the company, I think, is a mm-hmm. big piece of it.
Yeah, and really all I need is an IP address. Not much else to get somewhat of an idea of where you are. So,
well, when you have a GPS phone, and you know, some of the extensions out of Android that we've seen, where it can actually pinpoint exactly where you're at. Yep. You start thinking about things like what movie was it with Will Smith, where they're walking in and it scans your eye and it,
Minority Report.
Minority Tom Report. Cruise. Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise. Sorry, yep. I was thinking iRobot, but you walk in and it says,
"Wrong
oh.
Scientologist."
Yeah. So,
but with being able to shut things like that off, you know, it'd be more difficult to shut off your IP address than it would be shut off a GPS. You
know, that is so. One interesting noise.
Yep.
Well, as all of you smartphone owners know, there's obviously a cost associated with this. The device itself, you're going to pay a little bit more upfront, and obviously models of phones and carriers and everything vary a little bit. What's fair in your mind as a pricing structure? Should data to your phone be a flat rate? Should you pay for the amount of bits that you transport back and forth? What works?
Flat rate on data.
Yeah.
That's absolutely just the way it is.
I think the flat rate on data is a good idea. Obviously, people are going to capitalize on that. And my frustration is I've got internet connectivity through my smartphone, and if I wanted to go in and make some modifications, I could connect it to my home computer or my home infrastructure and have data through that. So why do I have duplicate plans? So maybe it's one ubiquitous device with a flat rate that when I'm in my home, it connects through that, versus, you know, I got $100 for my phone and $100 for my internet and $100 for my cable, and all of a sudden, you know, we got a car payment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, the company like Verizon could easily set up a model where you get your internet connection from Verizon, and then you can use that on your computer, use it on your phone, you know.
Because we're already paying for an ISP in addition to our carrier fee, right?
Yeah.
So that ISP could really easily be Verizon, and we could share that cost.
As far as flat rate, I know that a lot of the companies are going to that. I know I was just listening to something where Comcast is putting limits on that flat rate. I think it was like 250 gig a month for some of the internet subscribers, which seems like an awful lot, but you've always got the folks that are downloading HD movies and et cetera. And I think we'd have the same thing on a smartphone where you got somebody watching IPTV constantly and another person that's just using it for periodic Facebook updates.
Well, if Sprint currently has an offering, sort of a newer offering. I can't remember it's called, Any Something, Anytime, or
they're Absolutely Everything.
Absolutely Everything, yeah. And that's just $79, somewhere between $79 and $99 a month, I think.
I think it's $100 a month.
Yeah.
And it's everything.
It's basically no limits on calls or text messaging, too.
Yep.
That feels like a lot, though.
It does.
What do you guys think?
Think if you got three kids or something and everyone has a cell phone, right? Including your, you know, so everyone in the, if a five-person household has five phones, and you're paying $100 a month for each of these phones.
Yeah, it just feels it like kind that of up. That another fleecing from the telcos. If you look at your text messages, that's an SMS standard message. It goes over the same data network. It costs far less than a conversation, and yet they still charge you 10 cents a text.
Yeah, but if you look at it, it wasn't more than what, a year ago, where you couldn't even find unlimited voice for $100.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so if you compare it to, you know, and the way we were, I would say.
For people who talk a lot and text a lot. Yeah. And there are people that text a lot.
Yeah, but with everybody, you know, ditching their landlines at home, going to their cell phone as their main line, mm-hmm. you know, I don't see how you could do it the old way.
Yeah. I don't have a landline, so.
How long ago did you buy your first smartphone? How many years have you guys been using them now?
I think I've used for 6 years, 6 or 7 years.
What have you seen changes in the price? Have you seen the prices go down, or have they been
actually
pretty
the price
flat?
Has been pretty flat. It's been somewhere around $300 to $500 for smartphones, I think, since I've
so
I've
with one. with the rise in the adoption, we're not seeing a downturn in price like, you know, you'd probably would expect.
Or an upturn in capabilities.
Well, that's the big thing is, you know, again, 5-6 years ago, I was probably getting into my first smartphone, and the one that I'd go and buy today, it'd probably do the exact same things, which is very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. I think you guys are being a little hard on innovation here. I think there's been quite a few additional features. Cameras, you know, the ability to... Well, okay, cameras maybe be one of them.
So you can take a picture, great.
But yeah, well, that's kind of significant for
but as far as
blogging and
as far as actually using if you look at the evolution of computers, the operating system I was using 6 years ago is very different than my interaction with a computer today.
Yeah. So from a productivity standpoint, you're still kind of seeing the same.
I don't see any
usability.
I don't see any improvement in productivity in six years on the phones that I've used. And I know we've tried out the Blackberries. We've had some frustration with those. You know, the iPhone, not to be a fanboy, but it shows a lot better interface, a lot more thought. True, there's the tactile response issues, but
we touched on various applications that you like seeing on the phones, but previously, if you could have one killer app that would say that's definitely going to make me purchase this phone, what would it be? What do you want to see on a smartphone?
I'd say the full web browser is the killer app for me, a decent web browser. The web experience on anything but the iPhone and the iPod Touch is horrendous.
Yeah, I would probably agree. Another thing that I would think is just being able to, and this is beyond what just the smartphone, but just having one place where all my stuff is, and then I'm able to get to all of that stuff from wherever I am, like contacts and calendar and bookmarks and everything else. Just have everything at one place, be able to get to it everywhere. That's really the killer app. There are so many pieces where some of that stuff is there, but for the grand scheme of things, everything tying together, it just isn't there yet.
Just being able to sync.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess I'm gonna agree on the browser being better, being the same or close to the same as my desktop. But I think a close second for me is just better integration of my personal information management stuff, my calendars and my email and my daily work stuff.
But again, with that SaaS model and you know, why would you need those things on there? Why do you need to sync?
I don't need it necessarily synced and transferred to my local device, but I need the feel of it or the appearance that
it's native.
That it's native right there for me. So I don't want to have to go through a HTML web browser every time I want to read my, you know, my mail.
Yeah.
What about you, Chuck? What do you think?
I would say the killer app is the browser as well. You know, I agree with the syncing stuff too, and I think it's getting there. I think it'll, you know, it's definitely on its way. The SaaS stuff, as long as they're, you know, even integration with the SaaS stuff to make it native if you wanted it, you know, like what Google's been doing with that and latest sync stuff for their Google Docs.
Google Sync, yep.
Yeah.
I think it works pretty good. I think ideally, if I could have anything, I'd like to no longer have to carry credit cards or anything or any sort of identification and have all it available on my smartphone. So I just have the one device.
Just wave that in front of the scanner.
Yeah. The SmartPass
has the chip right in it.
Yep.
Don't lose it.
Very good.
Well, you obviously have to have security.
Right. Right. I mean, you lose your wallet.
Yep. And so, you know, with all of these things, a lot of them, you know, with the syncing, just like they said, it can be solved with the browser, but, even being able to create like an Adobe Air version for a portable device where you can use what comes through a web browser as kind of a native application. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure Android has a lot of that stuff anyway. So
it's definitely going to be worth watching, seeing what Google does. When do you expect to see some actual hardware and
September
and working?
September 09, or excuse me, September 08, I think, is what they've been talking about, is some of the first devices coming out from HTC, was it?
Yeah, and I think that the competition it's inspiring is wonderful. You know, Nokia is definitely very aware of this, and BlackBerry, and they really have realized they need to step up their game. And even Apple is looking at Android and saying, you know, if we want to be in this market, we really have to be the leader. There's no room for a second.
And Palm really needs to adopt Android.
And if they don't adopt Android, they better invent their own here and get it out before late 09, I think.
Yeah.
That better come out next month.
Yeah. I just think they really, really just need to, you know, drop what they're doing with the next generation Palm OS and Android up their phones, because I don't know if there's going to be room for one more player in the mobile platform area, because there are already a lot.
You should write Google. I mean, obviously we're in an iPhone black hole here, so what better test market than Fargo, North Dakota, right?
There you go.
There you go.
Okay, well, it wouldn't be a proper smartphone show without a little iPhone speculation as to what's coming. We're pretty much, I would think, in agreement that 3G is going to be in the next version. Is it going to be a hardware redesign? Is it an iPhone Nano?
No.
Yeah, I think
there may
be
an iPhone Nano at some time, but mm-hmm. I'd say the next one is just
being how design focused and how focused on the physical appearance of the machine. Steve Jobs and Apple are. I don't think you're going to see a major modification to the actual device. What I do think we're going to see is some sort of tactile response, which I think is going to be pretty cool. If you look at Alpine's got a LED on OLED on their car stereos, and you can actually have some sort of tactile response where when you touch it, even though it's a flat surface, you actually get some sort of tactile response. I think we're going to see another user interface milestone with that. I think that's going to be part of it. And then the 3G will be part of it.
You think you're going to see that in V2?
I think so.
I don't know.
I was in the Verizon store.
I'm optimistic.
Recently. Yeah, I can't remember which phone it was. I think it was a Motorola brand, and I was just playing around with it, and all of a sudden I just started getting this, you know, it was just buzzing my fingers back at me every time I hit a button. So
yep.
Yeah, that was
that's that
it
tactile,
was definitely unique. Yeah.
That's that tactile feedback. Mm-hmm. They've got a little bit better of a system than the Joltia, but
mm-hmm. we'll see. GPS.
GPS is speculated. Yeah. I think it's just rumors at this point, but
will we get Bluetooth or
it has Bluetooth.
Yeah, it does already. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has
I think they were talking about video was a possibility.
Yeah.
See, I think with their software
on
3G, too,
that might work.
Having the exchange support, which would be good for a lot of companies, is you know, it's already known that it's going to happen, but using a Mac, I don't have exchange support through iCal and minimal exchange support through mail. Does that also mean that they're going to be adding stuff to the desktop?
Good question.
As far as ActiveSync.
Well, there's the Touch. What does the Touch do for ActiveSync right now?
It doesn't have, there is no syncing exchange support. It can sync your calendar and your contacts through iTunes Yep. But I mean, it's definitely not like fully but integrated.
It's all part of the V2 that Exchange is there. There are people in a beta test program that are using it.
It's actually in firmware too. So if you, if you pwn your phone or your touch, and you can find beta versions of 2.0 and put them on there, and you get Exchange support.
Are we gonna see some cosmetic issues here with the new one?
As far colors. As the interface, or I think the form factor, you know, they got pretty much right on the first time. There won't be much, maybe color.
I think they'll have a couple special editions, but you look at the MacBook Pro, how long has that been? Yeah, identical form factor, you know, same silver exterior.
Yeah.
You know, once they hit a design, they move with it. If you look back at when Steve Jobs started Next, you know, I read that it took him like 2 years to figure out the right hex color of black they wanted to use on the outer case. So these things are definitely well thought out prior and not quick to change.
Yeah, and as far as the interface, there may be small updates to it, but it won't be anything significantly different. Yep. Like maybe the gradients might be drawn differently, or they might redraw the curves or something in the buttons and... That's it.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, I think we've gone beyond our 20-minute allotted time, but it was a great show, and I thank you all for joining us today. From Mark, Eric, and Jonathan, and Chuck, who is sitting behind me, I'd like to thank you for joining us for episode number 9 of Sundog the Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or snide remarks, you can send them to thepodcast@sundog.net. Audio comments are always welcome as well if you'd like to tag it with an MP3 file. Or you can give us a phone call at 1-888-9-SUNDOG. That's 888-978-6364. For Sundog the Podcast, this is Lon Keller. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.